Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Julian Zelizer, who's a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. He's a regular contributor to CNN.com and Politico and has written for The New York Times, The Washington Post, and his most recent books include Jimmy Carter, Arsenal of Democracy, The Presidency of George W. Bush, and his latest book is Governing America, The Revival of Political History. Welcome to Background Briefing, Julian Zelizer.
Thanks for having me.
And your latest piece, Elizabeth Warren versus Hillary Clinton, is a false choice. I'm getting all kinds of mail from liberal and progressive groups who are really all excited about the possibility of Elizabeth Warren running for president. And this comes, they cite the New Republic article by Noam Schreiber that you also cite, Hillary's nightmare, a Democratic Party that realizes its soul lies with Elizabeth Warren. Now, is this a case of, I remember the Israeli diplomat Abba Ibn referred to the Palestinians as saying they never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity. Is this a case of the Democrats never missing an opportunity to mess up an opportunity?
Well, there's a potential for that. I think the two threats are, one, that Warren ends up diminishing some of the enthusiasm for Hillary Clinton, or actually siphoning off votes, and everyone remembers the Al Gore, Ralph Nader moment as an example of that. And the second is that this turns into a contest between two Democrats fighting when they shouldn't be fighting, with somehow Elizabeth Warren being the voice for just economic policies and preserving a federal role in dealing with issues of inequality and protecting the consumer, and somehow depicting Hillary Clinton as being for something else, or Hillary Clinton herself trying to distinguish herself, when really the heart of the party should be on these kinds of economic questions, and the focus should be on them versus the Republicans. So I think those risks are there, and I don't think the Democrats would benefit from perpetuating this idea of a choice between two different approaches.
Well, is there any evidence that these two women are in competition?
In terms of policy, I'm not sure. I mean, I understand the criticism of Hillary Clinton, and I understand that clearly she has more connections to the world of finance, in part through the Clinton Foundation and just through her longer political career. But overall, you know, she still stands as a relatively progressive Democrat on a lot of questions, and there's evidence to think that they wouldn't be so different if they were in the White House in terms of how they handle some of these basic economic problems. So I don't think we should be so quick to render a verdict on what kind of Democrat Hillary Clinton is. And I think her record often goes against some of the stereotypes of what a Clinton Democrat is all about.
Well, I was just wondering, Julian Zelizer, whether Hillary Clinton and Elizabeth Warren know each other. I've seen pictures of them together. They seem friendly. Do you have any sense of whether there is a rivalry there, or this is a rivalry that's being ginned up by political speculation?
No, I don't know their personal relationship, and I don't know how deep the rivalry is. We know enough about Senator Clinton to understand that if there is a challenge, you know, she is very competitive, and she does have ambitions clearly of running for the presidency, and she would not take to a challenger within the Democratic Party kindly. We saw that with Barack Obama. But at this point, we don't know if Warren is actually challenging her. You know, we don't know how serious that is. So I think at this point, it's still real speculation. And what all Democrats need to focus on as a party are what their issues are, what they are about, and really setting an exciting and attractive agenda for their constituencies for both the midterms and the presidential campaign.
It would seem, though, just in the broader context, that the Democrats have obviously a huge problem now with the botched launch of healthcare.gov that is stymieing the Affordable Care Act. And, you know, you're a historian and a political analyst here, but it seems to me that this is more evidence that the political parties in this country don't get elected on the basis of what vision they offer the American people. They get elected on the basis of how the other side screws up. Because we had only recently the Republicans were dead in the water. They were toast because of shutting down the government and threatening to tank the economy. And then, lo and behold, a few weeks later, now we're told that the Democrats are toast. So what do you make of that?
Well, there's something to that, at least in terms of polls or media coverage. There's a constant reaction to what the other party does wrong, or there's this back-and-forth horse race that we like to watch in American politics. One person's up, one person's down, based on botched policy, based on botched political moments. But I don't know if that's true over the long term. And, you know, there is some evidence that the electorate is relatively stable, meaning the red and blue constituents, and you're fighting for a narrow segment of the population in certain swing states, as we've seen in recent elections. And there, the underlying economic messages, the underlying perception of what a party is about, still do matter. And we saw this in the 2012 campaign. So I think we have to think long-term, the way some analysts like to now look at politics, and remember that some of the ups and downs that we see right now will not necessarily translate into the ballot box. And even those still are reflective of the overall message of the party. So the criticism of Republicans with the budget battle was in part a criticism that they don't take government seriously, or they're willing to really stifle the government for their own political purposes. And the criticism about the health care is more than simply the specifics of the health care. It's also about the notion that government can deal with the basic problems facing the nation. So on both fronts, I think even these short-term policy problems feed into broader political, ideological views of the party.
But wouldn't you think, though, Julian Zelizar, that this botched launch of healthcare.gov and the Affordable Care Act, well, 2 points. One is that the idea that you could go back to the status quo, which is a broken private insurance system where we spend 18% of our GDP on healthcare with the worst results in the industrialized world compared to the rest of the industrialized world spending about 7%. So we're going broke with the current system. Then you have a situation here where the Democrats did, or at least the Obama White House, did embrace a market-driven right-wing model, which was came out of the Heritage Foundation and employed by Mitt Romney in Massachusetts. So is there, does this give grist for the mill for the Democratic left, saying, you know, we Democrats abandoned our belief in government, we drank the free market Kool-Aid, and look where it got us?
Yeah, I think that is important, and it does get to a fundamental in terms of how President Obama approached this health care program. And he approached it in a way that gave great respect and great credence to the basic private health care market. And so the critique from the left and even from some mainstream Democrats that doing that ultimately would only give you limited results and might cause more problems than you started with, and that the private health insurance system would continue, the problems with costs would continue, and that the program, in essence, forced more people to buy into a broken system. So I suspect you're going to hear more vocal criticism from Democrats on the left and even some in the center who question whether this was the right approach. It certainly has benefits. Millions will receive health insurance once this ultimately works, and there's still plenty of time for it to work. But it does raise this question of how much can you fix a broken system, and whether ideas like the public option should have been taken more seriously by Democrats or pushed for much harder in 2009 and 2010.
So Julian Zelizar, again, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. He has an article at CNN, Elizabeth Warren versus Hillary Clinton is a False Choice, and his latest book is Governing America, the Revival of Political History. The fact that Bill Clinton recently came out and warned the White House not to renege on its promises vis-a-vis Obamacare, it's hard not to assume that Bill Clinton is coordinating with his wife, right? I mean, so was that a signal that she might be worried, Hillary Clinton might be worried, that the Affordable Care Act is going to hurt her chances in 2016. It's pretty clear, with 39 Democrats voting with the Republicans to essentially gut the Affordable Care Act a few days ago, that a lot of Democrats who are running in 2014 are worried that this is going to be an albatross for them.
Yeah, I mean, he might have been coordinating with his wife, but frankly, as you say, all Democrats are quite upset about this and quite worried about the implications for their own reelection. So I do think he might be speaking with his wife's candidacy in mind, but I think he's also speaking as the same ardent Democrat, Bill Clinton, who we've seen in recent years fighting for his party, and very frustrated with the ability of Republicans to continually undermine Democratic politics. And so I think all we heard there was a strong message to President Obama that he needs to fix this, and that he needs to rebuild and re-energize his own supporters about what they've been defending now for several years, a very controversial health care plan. And so I think the message was in part for his wife, but it reflects more broadly a level of anger and frustration within the Democratic Party over how this has unfolded.
So in terms of this left versus the center-left split in the Democratic Party, where you have people on the left of the Democratic Party now advocating a presidential run for Elizabeth Warren, and again going back to the New Republic's Noam Scheiber's article, Hillary's Nightmare, a Democratic Party that realizes that its soul lies with Elizabeth Warren, the assumption being that she is the soul of progressive and liberal politics, which she certainly appears to be in terms of fighting for Main Street over Wall Street and for the 99% versus the 1%. We heard recently from the election of Bill de Blasio as mayor of New York that there was, perhaps he was a harbinger for a new populist left revival in this country. Could that be a factor? Could Elizabeth Warren and de Blasio and others, are they really the beginning of something that's happening? Or is this just wishful thinking on the part of the Democratic left, who, of course, have been perennially disappointed? And there's certainly every Democrat that I know on the left has been for some time disappointed in Barack Obama.
I think reading too much into the de Blasio victory is dangerous. It was in one city, in a very particular city, and it's hard to see that is a harbinger of things to come. I think the real question is, will Democrats understand that some of the ideas that are currently described as progressive or left-wing are actually core issues that Democrats' mainstream elected officials have been dealing with for decades, and which Democrats have often been very successful at when they embrace ideas of economic justice or even certain types of regulations on the economy. When they embrace that idea that this is the tradition of the party, it's not somehow an aberration or it's not somehow on the fringe. And I think the place where there's pressure for that is not necessarily these recent elections or even Warren being in the Senate, but simply continued evidence that where Democrats do well, even in presidential elections, is hammering away at this same issue of the middle class and issues of inequality. And President Obama in the campaign certainly saw how effective this could be against Mitt Romney. And so the question isn't just if the left has a resurgence, but it's really what the rest of the Democratic Party sees as being its essence. And I think a quick look at the history suggests that its strongest and best approach comes when it is not shy or not scared about the principles that the party has often stood for, certainly since the 1930s.
So is that to say then, I remember speaking with sociologist Amitai Etzioni, who made the point that this was during the Republican primaries, where all of the Republicans were debating each other and each one was trying to say that he was more conservative than the other. And it got to the point where Mitt Romney referred to himself as a severe conservative. And Etzioni's point was that the Republicans are proud to call themselves conservative. In fact, they're sort of stepping over each other to wear conservatism on their sleeves, whereas how many liberals and progressives have you heard standing up saying, I'm a proud liberal or a proud progressive? Is that likely to change? You're saying it could be a winning strategy.
I think it could be a winning strategy. I'm not very good at predicting, but I think there's a lot of pragmatic reasons for Democrats to do that, and I do think we've seen some of this in the last few elections, and we saw President Obama, whose policies often don't follow through on that, embrace these ideas as his primary rhetoric against Mitt Romney in 2012. So I don't know if Democrats are going to do that, but I think certainly the party should be thinking about that. Certainly the party should be less bashful about its own ideas. And realize that, you know, being more forceful about liberal values could be a winning strategy, not simply a losing one.
Well, just in closing, Julian Salazar, given the reality of money in politics and money controlling politics, and since the Citizens United decision, we've seen enormous amounts of money pour in. And obviously, the money race is as important as the race itself. And with Hillary Clinton's ties to her husband and Wall Street, et cetera, they imagine they have an advantage. Theoretically or hypothetically, Elizabeth Warren's not going to raise any money from Wall Street. So if money talks, then how is Hillary Clinton going to navigate between, you know, what you and others have suggested is that she's maybe a progressive at heart, but she has to also raise the money to get, what's it take now, a couple of billion dollars to become president?
Well, it's difficult, and this is one of the costs of Democrats abandoning campaign finance over the years and not really treating it seriously, including our current president. They create a system where some of these very attractive and winning political ideas are very hard to sell within Washington, not necessarily within the electorate. That's where the mistake is. It's in the political system, in the fundraising system, that it's difficult. That said, donors do like a winner. And if there is a perception of a powerful candidate, one who's likely to win and obtain political power, it's not inevitable that candidate can't win enough money, both through smaller donors as well as more progressively oriented big donors, to put together a winning campaign. It's difficult, though, and that's why this issue of campaign finance reform is not some secondary issue, which it's often treated as, but in fact has to be integral to what the Democratic Party stands for. But it is a challenge, and I don't dispute that at all.
Well, Julian Salazar, I thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Julian Salazar, who's a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. He's a regular contributor to CNN.com, where he has an article, Elizabeth Warren versus Hillary Clinton is a False Choice. He also writes for Politico and the New York Times, the Washington Post, and his most recent books include Jimmy Carter, Arsenal of Democracy, The Presidency of George W. Bush, and his latest, Governing America, The Revival of Political History. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcast at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.